Hey, everybody, fan of the Charlie Kirk Show. Thought crime, but I'm not there. I actually missed this one. I was having a dinner with somebody important. You can guess who, and I missed it, so I apologize. I was supposed to be there, but couldn't miss this dinner in Palm Beach. And I think you guys would understand if you knew the whole story. So apologize for that. Enjoy Blake, Jack, and the team talk about many different things. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. members.charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Thought Crime Thursday. I'm here, Jack Posobiec, coming to you remote this evening. I'm down here in Palm Beach, Florida. I've been conducting a number of, let's just say, activities inside and outside of the transition team, also doing the show from down here, watching as the greatest government that the United States has ever seen is being put together before our very eyes. Charlie Kirk, also intimately involved in said activities, and in fact, one of those activities is currently taking up a little bit of his time tonight, and so we're not actually sure if Charlie's going to be joining us. He was supposed to be here, but he may be flying in if he's able to do so. But do not worry, do not fear, because we've got a fantastic thought crime lineup for you tonight and a list of fascinating and wonderful crimes of thought to commit. And joining us as well is Blake Neff. What's up, Blake?
Howdy, Jack. Good to have you. You look like you are inside the sun right now, but I'm sure it's all for the best. And
I've got like a light on my thing. I could turn it down. Yeah. Is that? Am I still inside the sun? How's that?
You're still somewhat inside the sun.
As opposed to you, who looks like you've never seen the sun.
Yeah, you know, it's just part of the color, as it were, or the lack of color, we might say. We have a special guest today because I think Andrew's on a plane, and I think Tyler was like, I have to help some Republicans or some lame excuse like that. Whatever. We have one of the men who made our victory in this election possible. This is Matthew Martinez. He is with Chase the Vote.
That's
over
right.
At Turning Point Action. I would visit him every day before the election. I would go in and I would say, are we going to win? And he would be like, 110%, Blake, we're going to win.
And look at what happened.
And we won. So if we'd lost, we might have thrown him off the building. But we won, so he doesn't have to get thrown off the building, and instead, he's the hero. That's the stakes of winning and losing.
Thanks, Blake. Thanks for the introduction. And you know what? I do have a little bit more sun. We're calling here at sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Spent a lot of time outside of my life, actually, before I got into politics, I actually did a lot of AC work on roofs and attics, right? So I spent a lot of sun. So that gave me, a little bit more of my complexion, right, being here in Arizona. But, welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. Thank you for stepping in. Well, the first topic we have, I think we were all in agreement we had to hit this. We have armed lunatics murdering CEOs.
Right.
In the streets of America, the CEO of United Healthcare, that's one of the nation's largest health insurers, was, gunned down in the streets of New York, but that's kind of selling it short. He was basically assassinated.
Yeah.
A guy came up, pulled a suppressed pistol, shot him, made a planned getaway, it seems.
Yep.
It seems police are closing in. They have a photo of him. They seem to even know where the suspect, kind of how he traveled up to
Central Park.
Yeah, he traveled there on a bus from Atlanta by the sounds of it. Now,
oh, okay.
They haven't released a name for the person, mm-hmm. so my guess is maybe they were able to use security.
I think they have.
Have they released a name?
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine they have a name by now. If you've got that much information, you know which bus he took, you know which they're talking about the hostel that he stayed at. They have that. They're talking about. They have a
bus. Well, I guess
without the mask on.
I'm sure they would.
I guarantee they have a photo.
I'm surprised they wouldn't give out the name then, so people could ask for information potentially, like if they know who they're looking for. But mm-hmm. I guess. Now that I think about it, they don't seem to do that in a lot of other cases.
Well, Blake, so. You know, one of the things was that apparently the guy was traveling with a fake ID. So it could be that the name they currently have is the fake name that he used to check into the hostel. And then if he was traveling on the bus, then potentially, yeah, he wouldn't need, wouldn't really need to buy a ticket in name if you paid cash, if you did it in a smart way. So it's possible that they have a name, but it's just a fake name and they're just kind of, whittling down. I mean, either way, here's what I want to say. So I understand we probably can't. Can we play the video or we're on Rumble, right? I don't know if that's doable or not. But the question is, though, the first thing I want to say is that when this video first dropped, I remember it was going viral. People were looking at it. Charlie was looking at it. He was asking me about it. And people kept saying, oh, this thing is so professional. It's a professional hit. This is the real deal. This is what it really looks like. And I remember watching it going, this is a joke. This guy's a LARPer. This is a guy who's just like watched too many Liam Neeson movies and like too many Jack Reacher episodes, Jack Ryan, and thinks he knows, what he's supposed to do. And it was hilariously sloppy, hilariously bad. And I think that the more that he's like his gun jams at one point, then he slaps it. Oh, we're playing the video. All right, here it is. I mean, this is just despicable stuff. Just straight up despicable, evil, disgusting. I've stayed at that hotel. You know, this is the Midtown Hilton. This is where Trump had his first victory speech in 2016. This is where Trump's victory party was. It was the same. If it's the same Midtown Hilton, which I think it is, this is where Trump held his 2016 victory, was in that very same hotel. I stayed at that hotel. I was there that night. I was standing right. I remember at one point standing right there as Trump was walking in down that very same sidewalk. When was that? November 3rd of 2016, and I guess November 4th, like 3 in the morning, walking by, and I watched, there was a fire truck there, and I watched John Podesta's speech, like, on this, like, little TV that was in the side of the fire truck, and sorry, yeah, no, it's not connected to what happened, it's just my memory of that sidewalk, that very same stretch of sidewalk is so vivid, and then to think that there was this murder that took place there was crazy. But what was the late Blake? There's another piece of it where we also apparently found out how it is that this guy slipped his mask.
Oh yeah. So just breaking now, we were seeing this, we have a photo of the shooter where his mask is down. Mm-hmm. And apparently the way they got this was a woman was flirting with him at the hostel that he stayed at.
I called it.
And asked him to pull down his mask while she was flirting with him. And then you can see there, he's got his mask pulled down and is smiling at her.
Wow.
So
he's got that Mackin face. You know, he's got being, that face like I'm Mackin. Like, I'm something of an assassin myself. Like,
yeah.
You can see it.
A pure, like, hideous incel shooter would have never made that mistake. He would still be on the run, like, no clues left behind. Mm-hmm. But
and so there were some clues that were left behind, and this was, apparently was done. So I remember one of the first things I said was, why leave shells? You're leaving shell casings everywhere. They're going to be able to identify the gun. And it turns out that the shell casings were left on purpose with a sort of message. Do you have that?
I don't know if we have photos of it, but the actual words were, it was delay, defend, and depose. I think depose probably referring to like depositions that you would do in a legal case. And so that gets into the second part of this, which is so interesting, is he's a health insurance CEO. Health insurance companies are not super popular in America because they're the ones you have to interact with in our very expensive mm-hmm. healthcare system. Healthcare costs a lot. They sometimes deny claims or contest claims.
Right.
And, you know, the claim is especially that this company in particular allegedly is maybe more aggressive in contesting claims. And so what you have on the internet, if you check Twitter or if you check the liberal haven of Blue Sky, you have people just overtly celebrating this murder. They're saying, this is great.
Yeah,
and he got what he deserved. I hope this guy makes it out.
Those words apparently are referenced to a title of a book, right? This book that was written, Jay Feinman, Delay, Deny, Defend, which is, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's a book that was written about insurance companies who don't pay the claims, what you can do about it. So it was this whole, like, famous, you know, in those circles, you know, cut up of the insurance agency, a real grievance, by the way, a true grievance. I'm not saying it's not a true grievance, but apparently the writing, the words on the bullet casings were a direct reference to this book, you know, that was anti-insurance companies.
Yeah, precisely. And so it's a valid critique to say that these companies deny too many claims, but it's very dark that you're seeing this pivot towards people just overtly celebrating a, you know, what is an appalling murder.
Yes.
In the streets. And I'll be honest, I'm a little upset. I think even on the right, I don't see people quite as opposed to this as they should be. You're young, you might have a good, you know, I feel like there's a lot of there's a lot of sympathy towards, like, underdogs, however defined, even if they're criminals.
Sure.
Or just this sort of chaotic element among young people where they think America's a scam or America is rigged, and it makes them inclined to cheer for people who are, you know, violent criminals.
It depends on the side of my generation, right? For these younger people, amongst students, if you're attending all these woke colleges, they're probably going to be parading a little bit more about this shooting, unfortunately. Sickening. It really is. It's a gross mindset to have. And this is, it could be anybody, right? These are the same people that were parading when President Trump got shot, right? Who, they were just all excited, right? This is disgusting, right? But these are also the same people who are against all these gun control, or are for all this gun control people. So it doesn't make any sense. It's a oxymoron, frankly, amongst these people. But there's also another factor, or I guess set of people my age who are recognizing what's going on, right? And they're seeing that this is sickening, regardless of political sides or whomever it is, even if it's the most, although he is the CEO of the eighth largest company in the world, I believe.
Maybe the eighth largest health.
It's
probably not the eighth largest overall. Now, I don't know. I don't know my companies.
But regardless, even if the Robin Hood idea, right, what we care about, and a lot of my generation is justice. I think my generation is probably one of the largest, has this mindset of justice needs to be served with whomever, right? That's why you see my generation protests at the drop of a pen sometimes, right? Because they want to see justice. So it is weird seeing a mix in my generation, but I have also seen some things too. I saw it on Blue Skies, the Democrat little organization, the Twitter of Democrats.
Democrats and pedophiles.
Those are
the two groups on Blue Sky.
Maps. Make sure to say right. They're maps. Minor attracted persons, Blake. We don't want you miss. What do you even call that? Misorienting the pedos. No, we can't have that. This is Thought Crime, after all. This is a very classy production. No, but here's the thing. With what's going on, this is... So, Blake, you and I did Chronicles of the Revolution last year, the podcast series, which then we turned into the book Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions and How to Crush Them. And this is specifically the ideology that we wrote about in the book with Joshua Lysak came in and was the co-author of it. And we talked exactly about the ideology of communists and how this stuff spreads. They take grievances and then they decide that they can just kill maim, steal anyone who is on the other side of the grievance, whether perceived or not, right? So either a perceived false grievance or a real grievance. And sure, these are real grievances. I'm not saying they're not. We've all had all sorts of issues with health insurance companies, but that doesn't mean you can just pick up a gun and go start murdering people on the street. And the problem is that when I see conservatives going in and saying, oh yeah, you know, take it to the elites, you know, take it to the man, et cetera. Guess what? They view you as the man too. They view you and Donald Trump and your family and anyone else as this because they see you as unhuman. They see you as an invasive species. They see you as standing in the way of their utopia. And ultimately, it's not about justice and social justice and equity and all these fancy window dressing words that they use to kind of, you know, church it up, to try to dress it up. No, it's about envy. It's about grievance. It's about petty resentment and hatred. And so rather than do something to fix the situation, they just want to rob, kill, and destroy. And guess what? If these things are allowed to continue, they will rob, kill, and destroy everyone until they are the only ones standing. And look, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, we took a lot of crap when we put that book out, and it did very, very well. And look, we saw this coming, and it actually doesn't surprise me at all. And Taylor Lorenz, by the way, is someone else who she posted a, I don't know what they call them on Blue Sky, but she posted it, made a post on Blue Sky where she was saying that, oh, and they wonder why we want to kill healthcare CEOs the day after, or I guess the day of, an assassination in cold blood like this. And so people saying, well, wait a minute, isn't this Miss, you know, COVIDian Taylor Lorenz, and she's so worried about COVID, and she spent months planning this like book launch so it would be COVID friendly and COVID safe. And say, wait a minute, how can she be so worried about that and about getting one person sick, but she's totally cool with cold-blooded murder? Again, it's because they don't view you as human. They view you as something that is sub, something that is lesser, and they want you out of away. And their reasons for it at that point actually don't matter because they will condone any level of violence in order to achieve their ends. It's all based in resentment. And by the way, it's the same thing that's been going back since the French Revolution.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Taylor Lorenz thing. I think we should highlight what she actually said since a lot of people can't actually see it. So, like, first, right after this happened, there was a news story with a separate healthcare company, Blue Cross Blue Shield. There was a dispute. I don't know the full details on it, but I guess Blue Cross was saying they were not going to pay for like the full cost of anesthesia in some surgeries. And they backtracked on this because there was a lot of backlash to it. All I would say is I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out there's like scumbag doctors out there who keep you under too long because then they can bilk insurer. There's a shocking amount of medical fraud in America. But whatever that case, even if they're really bad. And she replies to this. This is right after the shooting. Uh-huh. And people wonder why we want these executives dead. And then she does various tweets. She like does all these various other posts on Blue Sky where someone said, like, you're posting your own sentiment. She tries to backtrack later. He says, don't backtrack. People shouldn't celebrate murder. And she replies, murder, like what happens every year to thousands of innocent Americans killed by greedy insurance executives denying their coverage. You should probably understand this because Taylor Lorenz is approximately your age.
These
I believe
people,
she's
these are the
somewhere
same people
between
that,
18 and 50.
These people are the same people who say eat the rich. They've been saying this for many, many, many years, and it's been subliminal. This is absolutely subliminal. So when you have that same mindset, that same campaign of attack the rich, eat the rich, despise those who make more, right? It's going to cause motivation. And this is what we're seeing in New York. This is what happened just a few days ago.
Yeah. And what
remember that? Hey, do you remember that movie Parasite? Did you ever see that movie Parasite, the Korean movie years ago? Yeah. Yeah. So that movie is, and it won like, he won an Academy Award or something. And that was a movie where the left was loving this thing. They thought it was so wonderful. It was like, oh, it's this great film, blah, blah, blah. And That's exactly what it was about. It was about a group of people who go to work for a family. And yeah, it won Best Picture at the Academy Awards. So it won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best International Feature Film. It won a ton of things. It was the first non-English film to win the Best Picture at the Academy Awards. So the first foreign film to win non-English foreign film to win the Academy Award for Best Picture, this movie Parasite. And what was it about? It was about a family that essentially hires a rich family that hires a working class family to go and work for them. And the working class family eventually just murders everyone in the rich family and ruins their lives. And it's the rich family doesn't actually do anything wrong to the working class family, but we're told that like the working class family are the heroes because they rose up and killed the rich people who like hired them. And I remember sitting watching this movie, getting all these accolades saying, what's going on? Why are we supposed to hate these people who, okay, yeah, sure, they have this, you know, privileged life in terms of wealth and in terms of, you know, how well they've done for themselves in their lives. And yet they, you know, they don't really get into how hard they worked or any of the sacrifices they had to make to be able to get to that level, et cetera. We're just told that you're supposed to hate them because they're rich, and therefore the working class family is justified in killing the older, you know, the rich family because of the wealth disparity. And it was crazy. And this won the Academy Award literally like 5 years ago. And I remember sitting there watching this going, why is nobody else talking about it's, you're right, it's this eat the rich mentality, and yet it's totally been mainstreamed.
Yeah, I mean, even I'm looking at our comments on the stream, and you know, we have Purple Daffodil saying it's like when people aren't sad when child murderers get murdered in prison. Well, okay, but a guy who runs an insurance company
is not a child murderer.
They are a person who runs a controversial business, and that may require a policy action. But what I've been warning, because I've talked to people relatively on our side who didn't care about this, were blasé about it, thought, oh, seems like this guy deserves it. And all I have to say is the people who are defending this would defend any other like unfamous white guy CEO getting shot. They would find a reason to justify it. They'd say, he pays a low wage. He doesn't pay workers enough. There was a sexual harassment lawsuit at his company. His company is racist. They don't hire enough diversity. They would find that he outsources to this or that country. That's bad. They would find a reason to hate this person, because what this is really rooted in is a fundamental resentment. They're basically happy that a white male CEO got shot.
Yeah.
And they would find a reason to celebrate this, because white male, not famous CEO is a kulak class, to reference that. If you're familiar with it, the kulaks we've talked about it on the show. They were the targets of the Bolsheviks. Yeah. It was like the prosperous peasants of early Soviet Russia. And that's kind of what the Antifa wing of America wants to expropriate. And they're not just focused on billionaires, they're very much focused on anyone who owns a company, is the head of a company, is conventionally successful in America, who isn't entirely subsumed into this left-wing apparatus. Purple Daffodil is fighting back. He says it has nothing to do with him being a white male. Well, yes, it does. It absolutely does for a lot of
them. It really does.
Maybe not you specifically, but for the bulk of people celebrating this, absolutely.
I'm not seeing the chat. I don't have it up. But look, here's the issue, right? Is you think, oh, it's not that big of a deal. You know, it was just this one guy. Well, guess what? If you don't crack down on things like this, guess who they're going to come for next? And they're going to keep going. And then they'll go for what else? The Trump family. They've already taken what, two shots at Donald Trump, or you know, the guy tried to over here in West Palm a couple of weeks. Literally, like a couple of weeks ago, Donald Trump almost was killed. And then a couple weeks before that, his head was almost blown off on stage. Do you think, oh, he deserved that too? No, you have to crack down on this stuff in every single instance that it takes place, because if you ever open it up, it doesn't stop. And you hear this all the time. I hear people on the right, they say, oh, the Romanov family, well, they deserved it. You know, they did World War I and that was stupid. And, you know, the Tsar was committing troops against the Kaiser, and it was, you know, it was just really bad. And, you know, who cares? And he forced people to be serfs, even though serfdom had actually already been outlawed at that point. But they'll just go in on all this stuff and will never actually consider the consequences of where it leads. It always leads to piles of skulls. And guess what? You think, oh, I'm cool. I supported it. I went in on your little, you know, anti-elite venture. Well, guess what? That's not going to save you when you get lined up in the trench with your family and you get the bullet, the muzzle of the gun pointed at the back of your head. Sorry. Oh, well, you know, it's just another white CEO. No, like you really need to stop, and you really need to wake up and grow up right now, because this stuff is incredibly serious.
Another thing pointed out is, just someone says it's just surprising the guy didn't have security, and I would like to fight back against that too. I don't think we should consider
everyone in America. They did say apparently that there had been some, like, I don't know all the details yet because it's still shaking out. We're in the fog of crime on this. But they said that he did actually have home security, because I think there had been some threatening messages or something that had come out. And so he had home security, but for some reason they weren't with him at this hotel.
Even that, like, I don't want us to turn into South Africa, where every person who has a net worth over $1 million needs, like, a special dedicated full-time private security person. I think that's deranged. I don't think that's a good way to live. And as I've warned people, if that is the way of life people end up having to live in, that is what will make people pro gun control. Mm-hmm. If they feel I need to be armed at all times because it is, like, constant threat of violence against me, that is what is going to make people say, screw it, police state, like, take away everyone's guns. Like, it's not good if tons of people are living in constant terror that they will be assassinated. That is a path of decline. I think we're all in agreement on this, but I would encourage everyone who's watching who disagrees to change their minds, because
what else are they saying? What else are the disagreeers saying?
Oh, they're just going, I like that we can respond to the comments today. They're just, you know, obviously a lot of people are,
we're live, by the way. So yeah. if you want to comment, please do.
I mean, just a lot of people are saying insurers ruin people's lives. What I will also say here, okay, it feels awkward to do this, but within the grand scheme of the American healthcare system, insurers are the meat shield. They exist to take the hate of everyone for a system that is created by a lot of people. Like, hospitals inflate healthcare costs, doctors inflate healthcare costs, the government inflates healthcare costs, pharmaceutical companies inflate healthcare costs, everyone inflates healthcare costs. And if you completely got rid of the cut taken by insurance companies, took them out of the picture, and we just imagined, oh, there was a 0% profit on all health insurance, and that was what it was, we would still have the most expensive healthcare system in the world, and all those procedures that you want to get would still be monstrously expensive. And it's not that healthcare insurance companies are always great, because they do have this sinister incentive to try to deny care when they can, but the system itself is enormously messed up, and you would still be having to pay way too much for tons of procedures if the insurance companies didn't exist. And I think people are afraid to confront this because they want to imagine that the American healthcare system is easy to fix. And unfortunately, it's such a calamity that it is almost impossible to fix. It would be like popping the world's largest tumor or something. Can you pop a tumor? I don't know.
I guess I'll just say, look, you know, this came up when we were doing the Unhumans book so many times, and you see communists and far leftists using actual grievances over and over in order to fuel this type of revolutionary violence. And unfortunately, you get a lot of people who will start saying, oh, well, he deserved it. And, you know, don't worry that it's happening to that guy. And, you know, I see people in the chat right now saying, you know, it's their fault. You know, they chose to be victims. Someone is saying people are treated badly and it shouldn't have happened. You know, he shouldn't have done that. Let's see, you know, the corruption, helplessness. Look, number one, it is absolutely sinful. It is completely sinful. It is a direct violation of the Ten Commandments, and it's unquestionably breaking one of God's commandments to do this type of activity, as is all communism, by the way. Then when you go beyond that, if you're condoning it, that means you're actually condoning the breaking of a commandment. So it's completely anti-Christian to support any of this type of activity. That's a huge, just basic, like 101 level thing. Number two, though, for people who say, okay, this is a legitimate grievance, it is. And that's why you have to, as a government, you have to come in and find ways to meet that grievance, find some kind of compromise to bring down whatever. Look, we didn't have a revolution in the United States when there were communist revolutions all over the world. Why? Because the government did come in and institute reforms for the working class. They introduced the weekend. They introduced the 40-hour work week. There were so many things, fringe benefits, which became benefits, of which, by the way, health insurance was one of the things that was introduced. Remember, I mean, Blake, from a historic perspective, you're talking about insurance companies. The idea that your job gave you insurance is actually, like, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly new type of just facet of having employment, because this was never originally considered something, a job was here's your wage and have fun, go to the hospital if there's some issue with you. So, even that the whole system of health insurance and tying of that to the employment system was something that was brought in as one of these compromises, historically speaking, going back about 100 years ago or 80 years ago in the progressive era and then in the 1930s as well. And again, I'm not defending any of it. Obviously, I stand for all sorts of government reform. Look what we just spent the entire last year doing. This is the populist movement after all. But I'm saying, what I'm very, very emphatically saying is you cannot condone wanton leftist revolutionary violence, which is what it does seem like this was.
Yeah, in the end, violence, chaotic violence, always favors the left. There is a reason the left has used it throughout its entire history. Jack, you want to read our ad?
Yes, I do. This is a great discussion, though. This is really, really good. I got to say, folks, they say evolution has gone soft, that men have traded their strength for comfort. But it's not about to let your instincts go dull. It's time to fuel up with something raw, real, and primal. Talking about naked organs. We're talking pure bison liver, kidney, heart, and testicles, some of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. Bison liver alone packs up to 3 times more vitamin A than muscle meat, along with high levels of vitamin B12, iron, and folate, all essential for energy, immune health, and keeping you sharp. And the best part, you get all these powerhouse nutrients in a form that's easy to take, no raw organs required. Head to benaked.com and use promo code HULK and grab 15% off. Time to silence the noise, reclaim your power, and get back to being unstoppable. That's benaked.com.
So we could keep on this, Jack, or we could go to one of the second topics. We could talk about what we want to do on day one of Doge, or we could talk about Bitcoin hitting 100,000.
Oh my gosh, look at this. It's not a thought crime to not be sad when evil people are murdered. Oh my gosh, look at this. Look at this. I'm not defending a murder, but this is like a revolt in the chat. The chat's like rising up against us.
Versus the thought chat. Oh man, I've got people are sharing their stories, which I don't want to discount any of those things. Saying insurance refused.
And we're not.
Texas Cat 117. He's saying insurance refused $3,000 of anesthesia on his knee. I refused after paying $20,000. In premium and deductible. It's a scam or a crime. And I think, big picture, what you can say is It's definitely worrisome whenever you have a system that is making a lot of people defend violent murders. And it's sort of, it's what Tucker would say on his show. He would talk a lot about, in his book, Ship of Fools, he would say, you have, you know, as a leader, you have a responsibility to not let the system go until it sparks a revolution. And so we've very much set our piece on that murder is bad, but you definitely have to think it is a red flag if there are all these people online who are celebrating it or defending it or justifying it or at least indifferent to it. For me, this goes back to, I was talking to Matthew before. He had never heard of Occupy Wall Street, Jack.
I had to look it up.
He had to look up what Occupy Wall Street was. Heard of it.
Now, was in elementary school when this was going on.
I was in elementary school. I didn't watch the news.
Wait.
I watched the news when I was in elementary school.
I always do this when someone says, so have you heard of Star Wars?
Yeah, of course. All right, I see where you're going.
Okay, and how old were you when Star Wars came out?
I wasn't born. Depends on what episode.
So that's not actually an argument. Okay, go ahead.
But yeah, so so the thing about Occupy Wall Street was it was very cringe. It was very bad. It actually was a proto element for so many very annoying things in what would be the politics of the 2010s. But it was also just an ominous sign generally for America that you have this level of populist anger against a relative engine of American prosperity. And similar to that, the anger at the American health insurance system is not just, it'd be one thing if it was just a threat to the healthcare system, which is frankly mostly bad, I think. But I think it's the sort of thing that if it's not ultimately solved, it will be what justifies just abolishing everything that makes America successful. Like, healthcare is their Trojan horse to just say, we're going to do socialism on the entire economy. We're going to do leveling on the entire economy. We're going to go full Bernie Sanders, full AOC, full Green New Deal. And the justification is going to be that your health insurance company sometimes, you know, screwed you on fees. And it does, there is this nihilist impulse that we do have to worry about.
So what was the goal of the Occupy Wall Street?
That's a good question. We never found out.
Really?
That was part of the gimmick of it, was they showed up in Wall Street. They would say, what is our one demand? And they didn't know. The idea was they would gather in their sort of populist commune in Zuccotti Park, and then they would decide what their one demand would be. And they didn't get around to figuring it out before they sent in the police and cleared them out. It was all a very entertaining spectacle, which I remember because I was in college when it happened and you were in third grade or something.
Somewhere around there. Yeah.
You were in fifth grade. I was in fifth grade when 9/11 happened. I noticed 9/11. I'm just saying.
You know, that's what separates.
I'll tell you one, though. I was obviously a little bit older than that. But I was alive for the LA riots, and I would have been, I guess, in second or third grade. And I didn't know anything about them until, now keep in mind, this is pre-internet era. So it was hard to kind of know about history unless you had books or listened to conservative talk radio. This is why, by the way, the conservative talk radio was so subversive, because they would just simply bring up things that you wouldn't hear anywhere else. And we still have that, but it's way more prevalent because of social media. That back at the time, you know, there were no alternative forms of media that you would ever hear any of this stuff. And pre-internet, it was very hard. So I had never heard of the LA riots until I was in college. I want to say until I was in college that I'd heard about it. And I was like, I can't believe this all happened when I was a kid, and I had no idea that it even took place.
Let's see, have the masses yelled at us further?
So do people understand what we're saying? Do people understand what we're saying is, we agree, we totally agree that there are actual issues with the healthcare system. I'm not defending the healthcare system. I'm not defending rich people, but I'm not defending any of those things necessarily. But I am, number one, saying that you can't just hate someone for being rich. And number two, I'm also saying that you can't just live. You can't just live in a society where you go in to wanton mass murder like this of people who are in cold blood, because that is the path to absolute societal destruction. It is absolute societal destruction to continue down one of these paths. Go Spanish Civil War. In the Spanish Civil War, when the revolutionaries got power, they killed 10% of the clergy. 10% of the priests and nuns in the entire country of Spain were murdered in the Spanish Civil War when the communists took over. So again, guys, this is where that stuff goes. It's Bolshevism, it's Chairman Mao, it's the Red Guards, and this is what they do. This was the metronym in our book. This is what they do. They find someone who is an unsympathetic target, and they say, oh, we're just going to go after them. We're just going to do this. But again, we're not going to use prosecution. We're not going to use FBI. By the way, and Blake, and Matthew, how funny is it? How ironic is it that the same people who say, oh, well, we can't let Cash Patel, conduct an investigation into people who have committed government wrongdoing. But oh, it's totally fine to just go and murder somebody on the street.
Yeah, that's very much a real thing. The same people who will attack any like organized use of justice that might be reasonable, that might be under control, are the ones they will celebrate any unhinged form of violence, a chaotic form of violence. Like, the left is fundamentally the party of entropy. They benefit from chaos. That's why 2020 worked the way it did, that you would just start tearing away elements of civilization and let people just go maximal, primal, destructive urges. And then they torch Minneapolis. They torch D.C. They torch America itself.
This is right from the prince.
Yeah.
Machiavelli writes, in order for you to be the prince or the ruler, you need to first burn the farms and then be the hero of the farms. This is exactly what we're seeing on the ground. We're seeing these, and you saw this at the BLM riots. You saw this with even the LA riots, right? I know that was before me, but I did do my research, right? That's where we get the, going back to the Korean stuff.
Have you heard of the LA riots?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Okay. We're being careful.
I read
this guy helped
books.
Us win the election. Did you know we had elections before you were
born? You're telling me now for the very first time. Right. But going back to Machiavelli, he writes this, right? And we saw this in Minneapolis. You mentioned this, right? Where they started rioting. They burned down their cities, and it just so happened that the social justice warriors of the BLM movement were also the heroes in that situation. This is straight from their playbook. This happens time after time, but we have to be aware. I mean, this goes back to George. Go ahead.
We have a guy in the comments, Mel6591, says he was there at the Watts riots.
Wow.
Watts, man. That's a historically important riot. And two,
Blake, remember
that
the peaceful,
was a while ago. God
60s,
bless you, Mel.
Right, Blake? The peaceful 60s, right? The peaceful, the nonviolent
mostly peaceful.
60s,
mostly
the
peaceful,
nonviolent movement of the 1960s. And you say, what about all this violence? No. That violence is separate. Those riots, the Watts riots, or the Newark riots, where they had snipers on the roof shooting people at random. For people who think that it's okay to condone something like this, I'm just going to say, again and again, this is it leads to, again, we wrote a whole book about it. It's Christmas time. So, unhumansbook.com, go check it out. Go read the book and you will see. You will see that anytime, look at this. Look at that. You're defending greed. You are defending greed, right? No, we're actually opposing murder, and we're opposing chaos, and we're opposing communism. It's possible to oppose greed without just murdering people wantonly in the streets, as it turns out. In fact, I don't recall any time where Jesus called for us to just go and rise up and start murdering people for being greedy. In fact, no, he requires us to go and try to pray for them, to try to work on them, to convert them, to get them to see the error of their ways. Yeah, maybe drive them out of the temple or something like that. But you'd be hard pressed to find any example of Jesus Christ condoning murder anywhere in the New Testament. It's just completely un-Christian. It is in fact the antithesis of Christianity.
Amen. Amen. Do we have anything else we want to say on this? Do we want to go around the horn on Doge or on Bitcoin? I think we have 12 minutes left before Jack has to evacuate by helicopter.
I do, yeah.
What do you prefer, Jack? You get to pick. Or you can pick something entirely unrelated. Or we can just keep arguing with the Thought Crime chat.
I love this. The chat's going, man. The chat is going. Look at this. Read about the French Revolution, the murder of the Hawkeye 102. Read about the French Revolution, murder of aristocrats. Some of them for themselves was conducted gleefully. Yeah, Blake, you know, that's for anyone who wants to read more. The book is Unhumans, or you could go, Blake and I did whole podcast series on this right around this time last year regarding, and we did a whole episode on the French Revolution, and it was horrific. The French Revolution and the reign of terror of Robespierre, when the Jacobin Club basically took power of the state there, it didn't end with King Louis and Marie Antoinette. Remember, by the way, Marie Antoinette was murdered simply for being married to the king, and he was killed for the crime of being the king. They decided that to be the king was a betrayal of the French people, and therefore he was murdered for being the king, and she was murdered for participating in that by being married to the king. And no, the quote about let them eat cake was never actually uttered by her. It was uttered by her opponents. And this kept going. The guillotine kept swinging down until the very last one was the nun, the Sisters of Compiègne, this group of, I think, 12 nuns who lived in a cloister who refused to renounce their vows. And even they were executed right in the center of Paris, where, by the way, President Trump is going to be traveling this weekend, because that's another example of the French Revolution, by the way, because the Notre Dame Cathedral was, yeah, we know it was burned in 2019, but did you know that it was also raised during the French Revolution? And the 12 statues on the facade of it, the 12 kings of Israel, were smashed by the revolutionaries. The stained glass windows, many of them were smashed as well. And in fact, cathedral itself was deconsecrated, and it was turned into a temple of reason by the cult of reason, the sort of atheist science-based ideology. But I, you know, that doesn't sound like anything that's going on anywhere today, right, guys?
Jack, we have a very important counterpoint that was brought up by someone in the chat. Individual Thinker mentions, why is it illegal to fly over North Pole or to go to Antarctica? What do you have to say to that, Jack?
Look, I'm just going to say, if there's any Santa deniers that want to step to me in the next 20 days, you're going to get the horns, right? There will be no Santa denial going on. It is illegal to fly over the North Pole specifically, and Antarctica, which of course is part of his flight route, because you would be disrupting Santa Claus and his North Pole Christmas time operations. And if you were to do so, then in that case, you know, I would support prosecution, absolutely, and incarceration.
Yeah, people at Turning, you know, younger people, they aren't denying Santa over there, are they?
There are a few, unfortunately.
We need to talk to Tyler about this. This is a big problem.
This is actually a question that I've been asking candidates who come in through the transition process for the Trump administration. What are your thoughts on Santa Claus and Santa deniers? Straight out the door. Straight out the door. And it's a great litmus test. Just out. Get them all out.
Yeah, out the door. Out the sleigh. Like, they might, you know.
I think Buddy the Elf said it the best. The best way to spread the Christmas cheer is to sing out loud for all to hear.
Yeah, exactly. I actually only saw that movie for the first time recently.
No way.
But apparently it's like a big Christmas
film. Wait, I'm the same way, actually. I saw it for the first time last year.
Is that the most recent Christmas movie that's like a canonical Christmas movie?
Do you like Home Alone? Let's say the Home Alone one.
Home Alone is my personal favorite.
Or Elf.
Yeah, Home Alone's great.
Home Alone is definitely better than Elf.
Really?
Elf is cute, but Home Alone.
Yeah,
I like Elf.
Home Alone has a lot of emotional oomph to it.
You got President Trump in.
By the way, my kids like Home Alone better too.
Yeah, the Wet Bandits would support CEO assassination. That's what our audience
and Sticky Bandit too.
Ooh, people are voting Elf in the chat. I'm a little surprised. I think Home Alone's really good. I don't feel like Elf has anything comparable to, like,
it's Sean Hughes. I'm sorry, no.
Yeah,
no,
and like meeting the dad who's estranged from his son in the church. I don't think Elf has anything quite like that.
By the way, Home Alone also is one of the last movies that you can see. It certainly is towards the end of movies that were huge tentpole mainstream movies that feature scenes inside a church and nativity scenes. And these were just inserted into movies that were non-religious movies. But the idea that a main character or there's a whole subplot that revolves around the next door neighbor going to see his granddaughter who's estranged, and well, the son is estranged and he wants to go see her at the church, and he goes there. And this is just something that's been totally excised from all of mainstream media, particularly Hollywood media, the idea of a character just going to church on a regular basis. And don't tell me for a second that that hasn't had an effect on the broader society, because I absolutely believe that it has.
Absolutely, absolutely. And John Hughes was just a great American. I think he's not fully appreciated for that. Just being like an earnest pro-American, like all big pro family. All of the good things in America, you know, civic Christianity, patriotism. I will never forget how in Uncle Buck, you can tell that Uncle Buck is a somewhat disreputable character, because he comes home and he has a bag that's for the Chicago Democratic Party. That's how you know not everything is quite right with him. Great guy. Recommend all of his movies. But yeah, Home Alone is probably my personal favorite. Obviously, there's the old classics. You'll see people say Christmas Story a lot. I think I'm a bit over a Christmas Story. That might be because it's on 24 hours a day every Christmas, and
I love Christmas
Story. Just gets really tedious after the third
and the new one
time.
They did a sequel to it. They did a sequel where Ralphie is grown up, and it's so he's the dad, and then it's with his kids, and almost the entire cast returns, at least the surviving cast, and they actually it for movies like that, which are usually horrible, this one was actually pretty good.
Does your generation still watch A Christmas Story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a Christmas classic.
I've never heard of that one.
No, my generation's
movie.
I think it's hilarious. I just think it's hilarious. I think it's so funny.
Is there any like new Christmas movie is there something like that's come out in the last 10 years that young people like?
It's all secular, unfortunately. All the new Christmas movies. Right. But the classics, at least, have the Christ element. Two things. They actually talk about why we celebrate Christmas, the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Man. And just remember, guys,
Polar Express.
Is that
Polar
a
Express? Like, kind of tried.
That one was a little weird. That was
I'm looking at Christmas movies now. Actually, for anyone who's got kids or grandkids, there is a movie that came out. Yeah, I just found this for my kids a couple years ago. It is an animated film. And it's called The Star, and the main character is the donkey from the actual nativity story. So it's the donkey that Mary rides on to Bethlehem, and it's this animated film of the nativity story, but told from the perspective of the animals. And so it's like, it's kind of cool, and it's great for little kids. And it's just really well done. It's obviously full on Christian, and it's got a really randomly incredible cast. It's got like Kelly Clarkson, Keegan-Michael Key is in there from like Jordan Peele, and who else? Zachary Levi is in there, who by the way just recently came out as a big Trump supporter. Chris Christopherson is in there. Mariah Carey's in there. Tyler Perry, even Oprah is in there. So I mean, it's just Kristen Chenoweth from the original Wicked. It's so bizarre that this movie came out and is like unapologetically Christian, and it has a really strong Hollywood cast, and it's just a great movie.
Now we have all of the people. Now we're gonna end up closing this. We have all the people in the comments are saying that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Did we debate this a week or two ago? I don't want to rehash it if we did.
So no, we mentioned it. And look, it's very played out as a meme. Like it's definitely a dead meme. It's like very 2018. And honestly, it's like it's just something that. It's like, I don't know, like some people have found it recently and they're like, oh yeah, it's so cool.
It was funny. Like the first time someone said like, actually Die Hard's a Christmas movie. And you're like, oh, it takes place on Christmas. Yeah. But no, it is not a Christmas movie. It is a movie that takes place during Christmas.
No, it's really
important
not.
Important distinction.
It's really not.
It is.
Is Batman Returns the Christmas movie? Though?
Yeah, like it didn't come out during Christmas. It doesn't have important Christmas themes. It's just a movie where Christmas is occurring in the background. Like it's
just
an excuse.
A setting.
That's why there's a party at the building. That's the only reason for it. And then they play like, you know, Let It Snow at the end because it's funny.
It could be at any other time of year and still be the same exact story, and therefore it doesn't pass the Christmas test.
Related to that, are we all taking part in Whamageddon this year?
Whamageddon
is where you try to go all of December without hearing the song Last Christmas by Wham, which is a useful thing to do because Last Christmas isn't a Christmas song. You could just change this every use of the word Christmas in that song
it's
to Tuesday.
Song.
It's just you could just change the word Christmas to Tuesday, and it would be the same song. Like Last Tuesday I gave you my heart, and the next day you gave it away. Same thing.
No,
has
but it
no
was,
Christmas
no, no,
themes.
No, no. See, I disagree.
No Christmas
with,
stuff
last
at all.
Christmas is definitely a Christmas. No, it's a Christmas song because number one, it has the word Christmas in there, and as a song, it is evoking the emotion of Christmas. Christmas is an incredibly emotional time. And so, you know, Last Christmas, I gave you my heart for Christmas. That is the giving of gifts. Gift giving, of course, an important Christian tradition to celebrate the birth of Christ.
Is it an
so,
American
no,
song?
I think it's
the very
it's,
next day they gave it away, which means they gave it away on Boxing Day. Is it an anti-Boxing Day?
So maybe. Well, they were British, right? So it wasn't George Michael's British? So I don't know if that's a. Is he British Canadian?
Australian. Boxing Day is Australian.
And British. British definitely has Boxing
Canada
Day,
too.
I think all of the, like, limey countries have.
So it's like a common. Well, there you go, then.
There is a line in here that says, Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas?
Yeah, Happy Christmas. Not oh, Merry man. Christmas, but Happy Christmas.
Okay, that's definitely pretty
I wrap
British.
It up and
wait,
send...
like, so here's. So the one interesting thing for me when it comes to the diehard debate is. So. You know, I was getting way down the weeds on this a couple of years ago, and I was saying, look, it's not central to the plot, and it has all, you know, it's just right there. It just happens to take place around Christmas. And then someone threw back at me, they said, well, what about the movie White Christmas then? Wouldn't the movie White Christmas also not actually fall into that as well? Because it has to do with a you know, a hotel and some veterans, World War II veterans. And, you know, all of this. World War II or is a Korean War?
What year was
Let's
it?
Double check
50,
that.
50 to 53.
50.
Yeah, but it's when the movie was set.
That I don't know.
And so, anyway, point being is you know, does that actually constitute a Christmas movie by that same test?
Yeah, you know, I know you have a heart out here, Jack. I want to just
call. Yeah, it was World War II.
Yeah, I just want to cite Michael says. Yeah,
a little bit. Michael
says apparently the hip new Christmas movie is Violent Night, which is John Wick with Santa, and the theme is getting home for Christmas. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that either.
I worry that after what we just said, it might be against the spirit of Christmas to watch and to watch a Christmas movie about that. But
yeah, there's a bunch of these like. No, I do watch. Like, I watch the new crop of Christmas movies every year. And just because there are popular Christmas movies that come out that don't necessarily make them, as you say, canonical Christmas movies. It's a Wonderful Life. Like, that will be watched every year in my house. There's no question. It is, in my mind, by far the best Christmas movie. Really, really strikes a heart at what we were talking about earlier. You know, by the way, I will also point out that in It's a Wonderful Life. Oh, here we go. Like, I just figured it out. This is how I'm going to tie together the whole thing in It's a Wonderful Life. Well, why doesn't Jimmy Stewart? Why doesn't George Bailey just murder Mr. Potter? Why doesn't he just shoot him in
He's
the street?
An exploitative
why doesn't he just take that wheelchair and push him off the bridge into the water? Wouldn't Clarence the Angel love that?
Yeah.
Right? So
that's a good point, Jack.
Would you want Billy to do that?
He would be screwed in England.
Yeah. I bet he exploited at least as many people as the United Healthcare allegedly possibly did. And I don't
think
that was
the point of the movie that he was exploiting. And he was taking people's houses away and he was, you know, foreclosing and then he was turning them all. And then in the dystopian version, of course, he turned the entire place into what? Gambling, drugs, alcohol, sex. And in the dystopian version, I'll never forget this, that Mary, who I believe is, I guess, you know, in her like 30s, right? If you understand, Blake, you know where I'm going with this. Mary is in her 30s in the dystopian version. And he says, "Where's Mary, Clarence? Where's Mary? Show me Mary." And he goes, "No, George, you don't want to see that. She's closing up the library, George. She never married. She's a spinster. She's a spinster,
she's a
George.
Cat lady, like, George.
She's an unmarried cat lady." And he goes, "No."
And this is what causes him to psychologically break. Like his brother being dead didn't shatter him. His town looking like it's, you know, 2024 America didn't shatter him.
And the ship that his brother saved in the war, all the sailors were killed.
None of that mattered nearly as much as his wife becoming a cat
lady. As Mary being a cat at a library. And by the way, so in the 1940s, when that movie came out, everyone understood that there was something wrong with that, and that should not happen. Okay, now we're getting real trouble right now. But I will say that J.D. Vance, if you look at the exit polls, did you see that poll that was going around of pet owners? And it was like every single pet owner demographic went for Trump, except for one. And which one was that?
I think we know, Jack. I think we know.
Godless cat ladies. Ooh. Which did he say that in an interview with Charlie? I feel like it was either Charlie or Tucker.
I can't remember at this point. I think it was Charlie.
Ah, classic.
Good times. Good times. Do you have a heart out, Jack?
No. Well, I thought I was, but I can do like 10 more minutes.
Alrighty. Oh, this is great.
Yeah. No, I'm loving this chat right now. Yeah, people are men with triples.
Ew.
The Life of Brian is not a – someone saying Life of Brian is a Christmas movie. No, Life of Brian is not a – Life of Brian is hilarious. Life of Brian by Monty Python is amazing. I'm sure Matthew has no idea what that – Matthew, do you know what Life of Brian is?
Love is Blind? I'm sorry. What did you say?
Life of Brian? Have you heard of that movie?
No.
He hasn't heard of Life of Brian.
When did that come out? Here, I'll look it up.
Before I was born.
Have you heard of Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Of course,
heard of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
So it's another Monty Python movie about – it's about a – yeah, exactly. Just lived a cloistered life. A sheltered childhood. So in Life of Brian is a movie where this guy is born in a similar way to Jesus and in a similar place and time as Jesus, but is not actually Jesus and keeps getting accidentally mistaken for Jesus.
Someone says their favorite Christmas movie of the last 10 years is Fat Man starring Mel Gibson, which – I have never heard of, but it does honestly look pretty remarkable.
Does it exist?
It is an unorthodox slant on holiday traditions that follows a jaded, gritty Santa Claus, played by Mel Gibson, who struggles with ennui, production issues, government interference, and an embittered assassin sent by a vengeful, naughty child. The film received mixed reviews.
I'm just seeing the cover of this.
By the way, is Gremlins a Christmas movie? Because he gets the Gremlins for – he gets Gizmo for Christmas.
Does it otherwise have Christmas theme? I'll confess, I've never seen Gremlins.
No, but it doesn't. But it is the beginning of the movie that he receives the first, you know, Gremlin as a Christmas present.
Someone says Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That is a Thanksgiving movie, as we discussed.
No, that's Thanksgiving. The other week. No, yeah, that's absolutely Thanksgiving.
That's like the only Thanksgiving movie ever made,
yeah,
other than that crappy slasher movie.
What about Charlie Brown?
That's not like a theatrical movie.
By the way,
movie.
I love
that's a television
that
special. Okay. It's totally different. There are a lot of television specials about Thanksgiving.
By Raw. Yeah, in the last 10 years, you either get – the last 10 years or so of – Christmas movies, you either get like a Hallmark kind of Christmas movie or you get this like gritty kind of Christmas movie. By the way, I will say that I am unabashedly supportive of all Hallmark movies. I love Hallmark movies. I think they're fantastic. I think they're wonderful. I don't care that it's the same plot every time. That's not the point. The point is that's the world we're fighting for. That's the world that, you know, imagine if you could just live in one of those worlds where all you had to worry about was, oh, the town Christmas party needs a fundraiser to save the old inn or something. And you've got this wonderful community where people join together and then, you know, Sarah is back from the big city and she's still single because she's working so hard. And then she meets the guy who runs the inn and they fall in love and off you go. And it's like that's the world we're fighting for. And that's why I like Hallmark.
Wait, what's the better Hallmark movie where the man from Business City learns how to like let go and reacquaint himself with rural life,
the woman
who's gone to the big city? Because we have both versions. Is it better when the woman learns to like go small town life, or when the guy is like hooked by a cute girl next door type in the small town?
City to rural, I think that's the better story.
But who should be going from the city to the rural?
The guy or girl? Which one has the character arc?
I think the guy going to the rural part, right? Because there's a sense of retaining all this masculinity kind of traits of helping out the city or the town, carrying trees, right, chopping down trees. I like that sense of movies bringing that back. I just don't like the softness.
I like the ones I take the opposite route. I think it's the ones that are sort of, you know, most media out there promotes the girl boss lifestyle and promotes the Sex and the City lifestyle. And it's like the career woman, you got to do this and you've got to eschew childhood. And this is, by the way, where you get the childless cat ladies from. And instead, you have these great Hallmark movies that come out every year that are like, hey, there's more to life than that. And there's good things that you're passing up on. And, you know, that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with that, but maybe, you know, maybe Christmas means just a little bit.
But does it maybe set up a misleading expectation where you could be a girl boss and then you just go on a vacation and like, whoop, swept off your feet and you still get your like whirlwind romance. Whereas if it's the man in Business City having that happen, it is mostly women who watch these movies. Then you are communicating really like, this is actually what men find most desirable. Like these traits, like, of the girl next door, small town girl, like, you might be sending a more useful message to them. Whereas if it's the like girl boss un-girl bossing, it might sort of fly over their head and they'll just think, wow, I can hook this amazing small town guy after I've done my like career stint in the big city. Hmm. You could
interpret it either way. Like the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce thing, right? Like Taylor Swift is like, oh, I dated all these guys. And, you know, I put off marriage, but I still ended up with, you know, Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, we have Thor Colonel says, girl boss returns to her hometown to take care of her sick father and falls in love and leaves her career behind is 75% of Hallmark movies. Admittedly, I don't watch these movies. I hope they're actually like this.
Once you've seen one, you don't need to see the others. They're all the same, just different.
Yes, you do. Over and over and over. But by the way, they do have some that are actually kind of cool because they're like, you know, they like go and film on location. So they go show you like we just watched one. Tanya and I just watched one the other day where they were doing a river cruise down the Danube, which Blake, you would like that. And they go and visit like different cities and castles along the Danube. The only issue is that so the guy, of course, is like a, you know, secretly a prince, of course, but it's like a fake country, you know, that's sort of like a stand-in for like Liechtenstein. Whoa. Now we're going to have words, Mr. the cause of all the problems in Europe for the last 150 years. Okay. No, no, those are cool. And, someone just put it out in the chat. Royal holiday. That's right. It's royal holiday. That's what it was.
One royal holiday. The Netflix like Hallmark knockoff, A Christmas Prince, was really funny because they have like it takes place in like an entire Christmas themed country called like Aldovia.
Look at this! Look at that! Look! Thor Colonel is with me. I'm with Jack on this. When I was caring for my grandma in hospice, she left it on Hallmark, and all the movies were low key great. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Because what it is like, yeah, it's tame. I get it, but it's like, there's so much garbage out there anymore that like you just turn on a Hallmark movie and you're like, oh yeah, this is what life used to be like. Hey, I'm hitting my heart out, guys. So I do have to cut it short here. You guys can feel free to keep going, but I do have to bounce.
No, I think we can just head it out, close it out now. But thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We were shorthanded and We'll see everyone.
This is a fun episode. Do you have social, Matthew? Do you have social? Oh.
Yeah, I do.
I was gonna say, do you have social media for people to go follow?
I do. It's universally on all platforms. MC Martinez, MC Martinez AZ, as in Arizona. And I also just downloaded Blue Sky, so you'll see me start ripping.
No.
I'm posting like a lot of Republican stuff on there. I want to see how long I can stay on Blue Sky without being kicked off.
Like, stay on.
I give it another week.
By the way, guys, Matthew did a ton of work with Turning Point Action. He really did. I remember going to visit over there when Tyler was, you know, just kind of cracking the whip, and he was like, Matthew, get back to work, get back to the whiteboards. The whiteboards need updating. You were like, Tyler, please let me eat, please. It's been days. And he's like, no. But you did an incredible job over there and, you know, crunching all the numbers. And I know we weren't really doing, you know, we'll have to do like a separate episode where we kind of like explain all of that.
Sure.
Oh, thank Blake, you, Jack. Got the song on.
No.
Blake, you just lost Ben Geddon.
No.
Lost your challenge.
Done. It's all done.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.